I'm Robert Beck, and who's with me? Say hello.
I'm Joe Lidster, and I am a co-producer of the Big Finish Dark Shadows audio continuation of the TV series.
And I'm David Darlington, and so am I.
We have been told that the theme is family. I started watching Dark Shadows from episode one. So for me, the TV show is about the Collins family. I tend to think of it as the show as being about Roger, Elizabeth and Carolyn. And their strange cousin comes in and things. Mm-hmm. So when they do things like Adam kidnapping Carolyn, that's fine. But then once they've got Frankenstein's monsters and Adam and Eve and Nicholas Blair, I was like, who are these people? What is it about anymore?
I think you're making the point that it stays about the Collins family for most of its duration, even though it takes diversions. Yes. And that's kind of inevitable in the thinking of what a soap opera is, and that you can't just sort of make it about the same four people in perpetuity.
And even if they go back in time, or sideways in time, or whatever, it tends to be presented as a variation of Elizabeth and Roger and Carolyn are always there the core of the family.
Well, I was thinking about that earlier when I was thinking, it's why I think Dr. Lang stands out a lot, because he feels unconnected to anybody in the family. Julia comes in because the family know Dr. Woodard, and Dr. Woodard then introduces Julia into the story, and she gets moved into Collinwood and obviously becomes really tangled with Barnabas. Whereas Dr. Lang sort of turns up and in his first or second episode realises Barnabas is a vampire, then cures him, and then wants to build a Frankenstein monster. And it's all the other threats in the show tend to be related to the family in some way, even if it's a vendetta someone's got against the family, or obviously Angelique, Barnabas, people like that. But Devlin in the early years, these are people who've all got a strong connection to the family, and Dr. Lang is the first sort of, I think, this character who just comes out of nowhere. And it does stand out because, like you say, the show has always been about the family.
And I suppose when Barnabas first comes into it, you've got, eventually, we'll go back in time and find out his discovering that. But it's all about, he's part of the family. And
but I do think what's interesting is, I think Barnabas and Julia, while they obviously are the reasons the show became such a big deal, they actually, I think, pretty much destroy the family serial drama. Elizabeth, Roger, David and Carradine become purely plot devices. The moment it becomes the Barnabas and Julia show, they are just there to be involved in storylines. And it's the great thing is it's the four amazing actors, so you don't dwell on it so much. But if you do look at it, you look at Roger suddenly is just a nice dad to David. There's no Joan. It loses all sense of any kind of continuation. Carolyn stops really having boyfriends, and or if she does, it's specifically because someone is trying to entrap her. David is literally there to be possessed and to talk to the girl, whether it's Amy or Hallie, to be possessed by, alongside her. Elizabeth is there for the 6 months of the year that she's in the show before she gets whacked off to Wincliffe or buried alive. She's there to be just, hello, I'm the woman who lives in this house.
I remember it being particularly astonishing during the haunting of Collinwood to see a shot of Elizabeth, Roger and Carolyn looking at the mirror as the words were appearing, because they never seemed to be as involved in the supernatural stories to the degree of, they were always in the background of it. And I mean, Roger never quite picked up on the fact that he was being controlled by Angelique as Cassandra.
Yeah.
How do you then, producing an audio series, which was mainly, until the two of you really got together and all, a series of stand-alone dramas that you could, you buy your drama, you listen to it. There might be a few links. When you, Joe, you had started that. Was that a task plot line with two or three stories?
Yeah.
And then, David, you were very keen to, this is a soap opera.
Yeah.
But the range I'm joining is standalone.
It was kind of an anthology at that point, almost. I mean, Joe had introduced lots of little things, but we really wanted to play that up more and more. I don't think actually family was particularly what I was thinking about, although it makes sense in retrospect. It's kind of the core unit of a soap opera, I suppose, more than anything else, is that you're, even something like nominally EastEnders in this country, which is about supposedly about a place rather than about a family in a place, if you like, but there's always been three or four families who all know each other, dotted around this square, and the family unit is where they all go back to at the end of each day, and it's where all the mayhem and intrigue crops up from, you know. And it's I think it'd be an interesting thing to try, you know, doing soap opera without that aspect at all.
Well, I think you'll find I was going to talk about, actually, family was something that was in my head when we were creating Bloodlust, but I was going to say there's a soap on at the moment that I think is failing, is Dynasty, New Dynasty. And it's great fun, but what they've done is they've written out the original Crystal, the stepmom, so they've written her out and replaced with someone else, quite bizarre, and they've written out the brother. And he's disappeared. And so what you've ended up with is Blake, the dad, his new wife, and his daughter Fallon, and then various people who are sort of tangentially related to possibly them or their storylines or whatever. And the problem is because Fallon is so brilliant, the show has become very much about her. But you are watching it going, there's something missing from this. And that's what you're missing is the series one setup of brother, sister, father, stepmother. Uh-huh. Because the storyline stemmed from who was betraying who was loving who was forgiving who. And I think that's why, for me, you know, this new series of Dynasty isn't working, because there is just this sense of these two characters are going to have a comedy subplot this week that isn't connected to the ongoing stuff and it isn't connected to the family that should be at the core of the show.
My name is Barnabas Collins. When I was a young man, I made a mistake, a stupid mistake, and I was cursed for it. And now, I am alive, and I am dead. I hunger. I need to feed. I always need to feed. The bloodlust, it overwhelms me. My name is Barnabas Collins. And I am the vampire. Dark Shadows. Bloodlust.
I mean, the idea with Bloodlust was, because the TV show became the Barnabas and Julia show, if it hadn't, Carolyn would have had a child by the end of the series. You can guarantee she would have got married and had a child, because in soap operas, women get pregnant very early on because it's the next generation. It's bringing in new characters. It's continuing the story of the families that are in the show.
And it gives you a plot. If Carolyn and Jeb had a kid, and although he's been made human by the end of his plot, but he's from the Leviathan, so they could have had that. That would give you another
story
20
line.
Years
yeah.
of storylines
yeah,
if you wanted
absolutely.
Them.
Yeah. But because it became about Barnabas and Julia, and Carolyn stopped being anything other than a there to be involved in a plot, you know, to react to stuff. There wasn't a next generation of the Collins family created in the TV show. Then, because we're doing all our stories are, well, not set before, but set in the same continuity as Return to Collinwood, the 2003 audio that Jameson Selby wrote and produced, that was created as a one-off event to celebrate all these actors being back together. So he didn't create new characters. He didn't, you know, there was basically two new characters to, or three new characters to use, actors who couldn't play.
So that Jim Stone had someone that he could play, and whoever else had someone. Yeah.
So they didn't. So it's made quite clear in that Carolyn hasn't had children, and it's certainly, unless he's had somebody, you know, unless he's had a child while he's been away from Collinwood, David hasn't had children. So when we came to doing Bloodlust, I was very keen that we created a new generation, because that's what soaps need. It's what serial drama needs. So it was looking at how we could do that. We couldn't give Carolyn a child. We couldn't give David a child. So luckily we'd created an adult version of Amy Jennings. So we were able to go, well, if she comes back, what children can she have? Well, she could only have about a 10-year-old. And again, that was no use to us. We needed teenagers, because it's about families. Collins, it's about the different families who live in Collinsport, and especially about the Collins family, you've got to have intergenerational conflict, and kids will react differently to events going on in a town than towards how adults would react to it.
And you'd be looking to find someone as good as David Hennessy and Denise Nicholson had been...
Child actors on audio is not an easy thing to do.
No, you need... if you're going to use child actors extensively, you need licences. And
yeah.
It would just have made production 8 times more difficult. And my God, you know how difficult it was.
So we... But we worked out then that Amy could have... We could go down the child... If we gave Amy children... Her children could interact with other children in the town, so we wouldn't just be having teenage characters suddenly wandering around who weren't, again, a bit like the thing with Dr. Lang. It was finding ways to actually link people to storylines rather than just having a character turn up like Dr. Lang does. So we didn't just want 4 teenagers just turning up, hey, we live in Collinsport. Yeah. So what we worked out was she wasn't old enough to have teenage children. So we thought, well, if she's married to a man, she can have a stepson. It's not quite a blood relative of the Collins family, but it's getting someone in there. She could have a stepson from his previous marriage, and we gave her a baby, which we instantly worked out. We will find a way in the storyline for the baby to be aged up to a teenager, because that way we have someone who is a direct descendant of, like you say, of Quentin and that. And I think, actually, it was... I don't think it was immediate where we suddenly went... Oh, so he'll be aged up to 18 so we can use an actor, you know, rather than just have a baby sound effect for the next 20 years of Dark Shadows.
Perhaps less than that.
But I don't think it was straight away that we suddenly went, oh, wait a minute, then he'll be a werewolf because he's the first son.
I think what must have happened was that was you and Alan. And
I think we were just talking and someone. Oh, yeah, so he would. We were sitting.
I think he would be Amy's son, and I was just like, oh yeah, obviously.
So it's brilliant because it means so by using the family connection and that, what we have now is we have a character who is a bit of Quentin Collins, a bit of Chris Jennings, of Chris Jennings. He's a bit of all these various elements, so he feels like he belongs in Dark Shadows.
Yeah,
he doesn't feel like someone who's just wandered in. So by doing that and by quickly killing off Amy's husband, we have Amy Jennings living in Collinwood with 2 teenage boys. And those 2 teenage boys are connected to 2 teenagers outside of the house. And one of those, the girl is the daughter of the sheriff of Collinsport, and the boy is the daughter... The boy is the son of the... a doctor at Collinsport Hospital. Yes. So what we're doing is it's using the family... What we want to do is rebuild Collinsport because... The audios, the first series especially, is very about the 4 or 5 regular characters and that. You don't really get a sense of the town. No.
And we've sort of, to some extent, destroyed the town. If you look at something like, you know, Harvest of Souls and things like that, everything has reached a point where, you know, there's not actually all that many people left. This place is quite desperate. And it's like, that's fine for what it was, and it's great in that story. But you can't keep doing that forever. No. There's nobody left to talk about.
So what we wanted to do was find ways to bring in these characters to make it feel like these people always lived in Collinsport without it and making them feel like they are connected to the original series characters. Because that's also the other thing is you don't want Quentin and Maggie and Angelique off having their adventures somewhere in Collinwood and then cutting to random people in the pub, in the Blue Whale. So it's finding ways to link them all up. And actually by doing that as well, it was finding ways to get Ed Griffin more connected into the town. Yeah. Because I find him in the first series quite an odd character because him and Susan, they barely leave the Blue Whale in the first series, if they do at all. I'm trying to think if they do at all in the first 4.
I think they do at some point, but barely.
I think they go to the beach at one point. You know, but we meet her. They have no... friends, they have no family, they are there to be the owners of the Blue Whale and to be caught, have conflict with Quentin, because Ed doesn't like Quentin. So it was finding ways, then came the Deb brought in Ed's mum, and then, like you say, we gave Frankie, it became his best mate, Susan died, but she stayed on as a ghost, and it's now, and actually been listening to the audio edits of Bloodline today, I'm loving Ed. Ed feels like he's part of the community. Yes. He's gone from being this... slightly angry man who lived in the Blue Whale and had conflict with Quentin too. He's got friends and he talks to people different ways. He's got a nice, funny, dry relationship with Jackie and Jessica, who are really good mates. He's quite sort of like, oh, you two. You know, he fancies this woman. And, you know, there's lots going on there that, again, I think it all does stem from the family thing of get them related.
Because that's the family thing with him and Jessica there, right there in front of you. And that's actually one of the things is that their relationship's quite teasy.
Yes.
And that's not a thing that comes easy in Dark Shadows. You know, it's a dark gothic tragedy, but people sort of slightly taking the mickey out of each other is actually quite nice. You know?
Yes, I think it's something that we... You want the... You know, I love the TV series of Dark Shadows, but it can be very dramatic and... Yes. Is it portentous? Is that the word?
Portentous.
And I mean, that's part of the joy of it, is the fact it's like that. If you were doing that all the time in the audios, it wouldn't work. So what I think the audios have to do is have that, but also have a slightly more realistic, modern-day sensibility to it, which is that characters do have teasing relationships and things, which just makes them seem a bit more human. And again, it's almost like we've gone back to the early days of the TV series.
Yes,
where
the
early days of the TV series is about the town, and it's about the girl in the diner and the boy who works there and the fisherman and the pub and da-da. And the TV series gradually knocked all that out, but it always came set in Collingwood.
It's interesting as well, because we had that slight disconnect on Bloodlust once or twice. But we certainly both went through a phase of going, who the hell is Frankie and why is he here?
Yeah.
Because we couldn't quite get him absolutely linked to people until we said, well, okay, he's his best mate, but he's also her boyfriend, and that's two reasons that we should care who this person is. But, and that sort of meant that he knitted into it a bit better.
Yeah.
Rather than just being a random bloke in a bar,
Something you didn't quite tie off there that I think is quite important. As you mentioned, trying to fit Ed in more, and then you mentioned his relationship with Jessica. And I just want to back to that from that slide. Presumably someone at some point had to make the decision that this character, Jessica Loomis, who's Willie's wife in The Turn to Collingwood, could be Ed Griffin's mum. How did that come about?
Came about, because that happens at the very end of Kingdom of the Dead, that came about because at that point, I don't think I'm credited on it, but I kind of helped Stuart Manning with Kingdom of the Dead. Here's an idea you could do. Well, here's something you could do. And it's all very much Stuart's work. And I love Kingdom of the Dead, so I'm not taking any credit away from him for that. And then I can't remember. It was one of us said how Jessica could be the same character purely because Marie Wallace at that time was recording The Dollhouse.
Yeah, that was
it. Is that the only one? Because that was the only one she did.
So
realised she could record a cameo for Kingdom of the Dead. I want to say it was my idea, but I'm trying to think if that's just me misremembering, because I'm not even sure. I must have heard Return to Collingwood by then.
I can't recall at all, because this is something just before I came along. So.
But it certainly was it was done at the end of Kingdom of the Dead, and it was great, because it did mean we got Marie Wallace, who is absolutely, how brilliant is she in Bloodline? Every scene of her in Bloodline, I'm hooting. I'm absolutely hooting. Yeah. She is so brilliant.
She forms a little double act with Quentin Collins.
She forms a double act with everyone. every person she's in a scene with.
Yeah.
It's like, well, Jessica's just amazing.
Is this Bloodline?
Yeah,
so that's what I was thinking of.
Every scene she's in, person she's in a scene with, she's amazing in. It gave the Blue Whale a bit more of a vibe to it. You know, it's not just someone walking in and having a drink. This married couple who were disconnected to everybody else, and then Susan Owens having an affair with Quentin. It becomes a mother and son, which is slightly different and a bit more interesting than the husband and wife. You know, again, there's a generation thing. There's also the fact that he's an adult son living and working with his mum, which causes, you know, he's become a more interesting character.
And you found out in Bloodlust that Jessica never particularly liked Susan anyway.
Yes.
So that's it's family stuff.
Yeah.
And you've introduced Jackie Tate, now works in the...
In the Blue Whale.
In the Blue Whale.
So when we remember.
Every now and then. She's not actually allowed to work in the Blue Whale. We're fairly confident of this. So she's sort of doing things that nobody's really seeing.
She's not allowed to serve drinks, presumably.
Yeah, no one can see her from the street. That's fine. She's all right.
But that allows you to have Jackie Tate at home with her mum and talking to her mates, Cody and Harry and Tom, and in the Blue Whale with Jessica, who she'd never have.
Yeah.
Any contact with, really.
Yeah.
It allows you to throw people. I suppose I'm going to slightly pretentiously start to talk about you're creating fake families as well. You're creating relationships.
Yeah, no, it's not about fake families. It's about the community. And so it is. It's about the friendship group. So there was something I was listening to in Bloodline today, which came about bizarrely. There's a funny thing in TV soaps where it's a character's 18th birthday, so they have it in the pub, in the bar, and here are the people who are there. And those people who are there aren't dictated to by their relationships with their characters, they're dictated to by the structure, the schedule of soap filming.
Who's in
this week? So who is in this week? Who can be in the bar with them? Now, obviously on audio, we don't have that. But I found in Bloodline, there's an interesting thing where we found ourselves putting Amy and Rhonda together for reasons that are in the story. But what was interesting was going, well, Amy and Rhonda have no reason to like each other. They're not friends. Mm. So actually, can we make them friends? And that, it's an exciting subplot. Don't worry, it's not what Bloodline is about. It's, will two people become friends? But it's a little subplot in it, just dealt with in one episode, where we put these two characters together who have no reason to actually like each other. They're very different people.
And we enjoy playing with the sort of slight awkwardness of it.
Yeah, yeah, and it absolutely plays with the awkwardness of it. It's very funny. Both actors are amazing in it. And it was about creating that new family. The Jessica Jackie thing was never planned. That came about because I don't even think they interact in Blood. Well, they have the occasional... Yeah. Hello,
who are you? Tries to buy a drink.
Buy a drink,
yes.
They came about by chance.
But you can serve them.
Yeah, as I think often things do in soaps, it came about by chance in that when I asked Penny Faith to pitch a story for when we're doing the dramatic readings that are set in between Bloodlust and Bloodline, I said, I want a story for Marie Wallace as Jessica Griffin. We want to use this actor, Ryan Richard, that we've used before, but only in a small role. We want to give him a proper role. And I think I said, you've got the option of Cody or Jackie.
When you done that, you used Harry and Tom.
So she had the option of Cody or Jackie, basically a younger English actor that we can use, or a younger British-based actor that we can get into the studio quite easily.
Yeah.
But you don't know that if Wallace, someone happens to listen to this podcast, they will be going, so the chance of using me, but chose to use Alexander Donaghy.
But he plays two characters. He plays father and son in Bloodlust and Bloodline, so he can stop complaining. But it was in the soap way, Penny created the Jackie-Jessica friendship, which we've then carried on because we love it, because it's two women who are very different ages, but they're just friends, and it's lovely and it's nice to have that. And again, it just gives it much more of a sense of, it becomes actually quite hard because the problem is we've spent so much time creating this family of all these different other families and stuff. You still want to kill anybody off, but you kind of need to in Dark Shadows, because people need to die, otherwise it's not very scary. So it's actually...
Yeah.
I'd listen to that in Bloodline. Anybody who comes in and does about three, like, you know, sort of, hello, I'm just here visiting. Oh, no, you're on.
End of it.
The problem is when you create the family, and you can see why Dark Shadows maybe moved away from it slightly, is when you create a family of characters, and what we've got is a lot of characters who like each other, a lot of characters who love each other. It's then very difficult to deal with the grief because, you know, TV soap operas are very bad for it. TV soap operas guarantee 9 times out of 10, if someone's child or spouse dies in a TV soap opera, most of the characters will carry on and go, oh, that was sad, and then carry on with their storylines, because soap means continued storylines. Mm. And the people closest to them, or the husband or the father, will have 2 weeks of, you know, award-winning acting to do, where they'll do a lot of crying, and then they'll go on holiday.
Yes.
And people go on holiday 2 weeks after someone has died, so that basically when they come back in 2 months' time, they can go, well, obviously I'm still sad, but let's move on. I'm going to have an affair now.
New
plot. I mean, we did it in Bloodlust, where we killed off, spoilers if anyone hasn't heard Bloodlust, Amy's husband, Andrew, and we did have to work very hard on that because he's got a teenage son. How is that teenage son? And it's not when I say about they go off on holiday, it's not a dismissal of TV soaps. I love TV soaps, but it is that thing where you go in Bloodlust, you go, we can't spend the rest of this series having poor Scott Haran, who plays Harry, Andrew's son, he can't spend the next 6 episodes going, I'm so sad, I miss my dad, and but why did this happen to me? So we had to create a believable way, or a semi-believable way, and that was, instantly, he's got this grown-up brother he's got to look after. His dad's a horrible person. His dad has said horrible things to him. And his dad is responsible for what has happened to their son, his baby brother. Yeah. So it's finding all these ways to make Harry not be absolutely grief-stricken and devastated. There are issues with it. There are issues with it that continue into Bloodline, where he realises he hasn't necessarily dealt with all of his grief.
Yeah. I suppose,
but it allows him to carry on, to go to the town meeting. It allows him to be stabbed in the neck so he can go into hospital and be, is he a victim or...
As he says himself, it's like his response is complicated by virtue of the fact that he didn't like his dad very much.
Yeah.
But that's fine. That's not unbelievable in itself. That's just a, well, that's what you then deal with.
Yeah.
You deal with the man being conflicted about the emotions he's feeling.
Yeah.
That's the drama of it. Yeah.
It's distracting the character from the big event and distracting the audience at the same time from the big event. One family relationship that we haven't mentioned at all yet, and I think it's one of my favourites of the whole series, TV and audios, is Quentin and Tommy. Because Tommy is the grown-up child, the instantly grown-up child, who's got the werewolf cuffs, and Quentin's this immortal.
Well, again, I don't know if it's... if it was even a deliberate choice, whether that... I can't remember, because like I say, sometimes these things happen because those two actors are available, or sometimes these things are... I think... but there is a problem with Quentin when he comes back in the TV series to 1970. It's a brilliant moment, but he then has nothing to do and he has no connection to anyone in the show. So he becomes another, well, I'm just here to be possessed, as and when it's needed, once his storyline with Amanda is over. It has no connection. He doesn't build up any relationships because the show has stopped being about the modern-day family building relationships with people. To a certain extent, I felt that continued slightly in the earlier audios because Barnabas and Angelique are clearly linked and Quentin's a bit of an outsider and he's a bit grumpy and doesn't really get on with people. He's very grumpy towards Willie. So he doesn't... He basically, I think, becomes one of a set of characters. So it was about, well, how can we move his story on? So that was very deliberate in Bloodlust, was a reference to him having got married, because we went, well, hopefully if we get to do more, we can explore who his new wife is and stuff. And then I think, it was with Tom stuff. We just realised I like Quentin when he's fun and sexy. I don't like Quentin when he's angry and cynical all the time. And I think giving him, a wife, but also, B, a relationship with a younger male who is so excited by everything, it allows Quentin to be excited about things. It allows Quentin to laugh and enjoy life, rather than just being a brooding person waiting for a storyline. The whole concept of what we were doing in Bloodlust, a lot of it was about how can we make this a family? How can we go from there are two possessed people living in Collinwood to there is a family living in Collinwood again?
But yeah, I mean, at some extent, it's almost taking the concept of what constitutes a story, because it's, well, there could be incidents going on all over the town involving any number of people, but you follow the people that you know or that you care about to some extent, and you introduce people as they become important to that. And it's possibly slightly a callous way of looking at it, going, well, maybe other people are dying as well, but still, these are who we're following, you know. But it's just in the nature of what a story is, if you don't want it to become too big and sprawling and unmanageable, yeah.
There's a wedding coming up.
Yes, there is.
Or not, or yes, or no.
There is, yes.
Yeah. In Bloodline, how does family link into Bloodline then?
It's very much about family. It's a total coincidence that we're talking about it for this, but it is very much about family. Bloodlust was a murder mystery that also was there to establish all these characters for new listeners. Bloodline is very much about the family, and it's about the wedding. And it's actually been great listening to the audio edits. I hadn't realised quite how many... There's more room for scenes to breathe slightly in Bloodline, because it's less about, got to establish this, and got to be plot point, murder mystery. Because there's, especially in the early episodes, there's a sense of, we're building up to the wedding. Like today I was listening to a gorgeous scene between Quentin and Harry, and it's a proper two characters sit down and talk about their feelings type scene. It establishes a minor plot point, but it's much more about a family relationship. And I don't know if you found this while editing it, that there's a slightly different pace to it, maybe?
Yeah, definitely. Pace is a little slower. Not that it's boring or anything, it's just it just breathes that little bit more.
It's good to know it's not boring.
Yeah. But it does. It just sort of takes its time about things in a way that is necessary. But it comes down to even the titles kind of indicate what they are. Bloodlust is a dramatic, melodramatic, groaning world title about, you know, someone is killing something. And whereas this one is Bloodline, it's more about a sort of background, if you like, almost, that connects people.
Mm.
It's not intrinsically saying, here's what's happening, because, you know, we wouldn't want to give too much away about that. But the two different flavours that we're presenting are very much present in the titles. It's, there are bits of Bloodline when you will definitely start crying.
Mm.
Absolutely positive about it. I've done it myself. So. Do you know something that just struck me as you were talking about it? Was, you know, the fact that you've kind of got the two big waves of Dark Shadows, right, originally, because you've got a year in, Barnabas appears, 2 years later, Quentin appears, both being the suddenly the big hit of the show. Do you think it would have been a very different show? Do you think it would have even been possible if either of those people hadn't been a Collins?
No, because I think that's what makes it work. I think if Barnabas had just been a random vampire who started attacking Collinsport,
it would have been a very different show. Yeah.
And a lot of how Barnabas survives is, you know, for all that Barnabas is evil in those first
months,
he's evil. When he's chatting to Elizabeth and charming her, Jonathan Frid plays it so straight. He plays it absolutely like it's real, that he really cares about Elizabeth and he wants to do the old house or whatever. And it's quite bizarre to watch sometimes, because you are sitting there watching him being very, very nice with people while knowing that he's got Maggie chained up. And I think, had he not been a family member, that wouldn't have been there.
Right.
And I don't think it would have worked. And again, with Quentin, it wouldn't have worked if they just, if it had just been a random ghost haunting the house or something. There wouldn't have been mystery for people. So, you know, that's what I love about it, is that I think, you know, I think the Quentin story is brilliant for that. Being very much about the family. For me, the tragedy of Dark Shadows, the utter tragedy of Dark Shadows, is they never go back to the modern day family right at the end of the show. I really wish they'd done just one scene there or something, and that's actually why the last section of the show is slightly more unpopular, I think, with people.
Yeah, it seems to fade away.
Well, it's 1841 in parallel time, with no characters from our time, our family, our universe there. They're all playing new characters.
Yeah, we know all and the actors, actually, but none of the characters.
There's some lovely stuff there. And some lovely frocks. Melanie, is it? Carolyn's character, Melanie, I think. Yeah, Nancy's character, I think it's Melanie. It's got beautiful clothes. There's a lot of really nice stuff there. It's quite spooky in that. There's some really good stuff there. But it's not really Dark Shadows, because it's not connected to the Collins family.
Yeah.
They are ancestors in back in time of a parallel universe Collins family.
It's F. Barnabas. I haven't quite reached it yet. But it's F. Barnabas had never become a vampire.
Yes.
What life would have been like.
Right. But that's a very minor plot point to explain why Jonathan Frid is now playing Bramwell, Barnabas' son, because Barnabas is dead. And it's not like it's not like it goes, well, but did he ever prepare with Angelique? You know, is Lara Parker in it? No, Lara's just playing a different character. And it's so unconnected to the rest of the family.
So I think we are coming to the conclusion then, aren't we, that Dark Shadows is nothing without family.
Dark Shadows is all about the family. And what a family they are. What a crazy, mixed up, kooky family they are.
And on that note, we can go to the Blue Whale.
I hope they've got the jukebox on.
Don't worry, Jackie. A quiet, peaceful evening at Collingwood will cure what ails you.
Hello. Oh, hi,
Leela, I found it. Afternoon, Jackie.
Uncle Quentin, just 5 minutes. The subject continues to stonewall me. Hi, Jackie.
Thomas, stop calling people subjects.
Leela, it's Jackie. We've met, like, 5 times.
Yes, sorry. Come in.
Is Harry around?
I think he's in the conservatory.
Well, I didn't know Collingwood had a conservatory.
It didn't until Carolyn's mystical makeover last year.
Amy! Let me see that diamond again. Wow. Set a date yet?
Nope. Just basking in the glow.
Amy, honey, want to help me do unspeakable things to a turkey?
All right, I'm coming.
Well, if my door-holding services are no longer required, I might get back to work.
What's that, tomboy?
It's a tape recorder. I found it in the attic.
It looks older than you, although that's not saying much.
I'm making a documentary about the Collins family, starting from me and going through generation after generation, stretching all the way back to
me.
This family is weird.
Well, Wolf Boy, I'm not part of the Collins family, so I guess I'm not needed. I'll go find Harry.
Run while you can.